Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks, and let's move on to politics in Washington in the new year. So far, it looks a bit like the old year. Republicans are in charge in Washington. President Trump is busy on Twitter, tweeting this week, for example, that his nuclear button is much bigger and more powerful than North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's nuclear button. There's also the new book published by journalist Michael Wolff, Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House, which prompted a rift between the president and his former top advisor, Steve Bannon. Among other things, it portrays a deeply troubling view of a president uninterested or perhaps unable to grasp the complexities of governing. We've been talking this week to members of Massachusetts' congressional delegation about the year ahead in politics, and joining us now is Stephen Lynch, who represents part of Boston and parts of eastern Massachusetts. And Congressman Lynch, thanks so much for coming in.
Good to be with you, Anthony.
It's really good to have you. So you're the lead Democrat on the National Security Subcommittee. How concerned are you about the president's tweets, and specifically this one in North Korea? I mean, how worrying is that to you?
Very, very worrying on a number of levels. I mean, just look at what he's doing with the budget. He's right now proposing a 31% cut to the State Department. We've got vacancies in the ambassadorship in Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, the EU. So we've got a bunch of vacancies out there. It's rather scattershot in terms of what the president's priorities might be at any one given time. We've got, basically total denial by the Republican Oversight Committee with respect to Russian hacking of our election system. And also, we've got some serious concerns with respect to the, financial networks, SWIFT and others, where we've got North Korean hacks that have been successful. So from a national security perspective, the current approach by the president is extremely troubling.
Mm. I want to ask you about one point that sort of came out of this, all of this brouhaha we've been hearing about Michael Wolff's book, Fire and Fury Inside the Trump White House. And he writes that when President Trump decided to fire FBI Director James Comey, he did it pretty much entirely on his own without the knowledge or advice of his closest advisors. And yesterday I read this by Michelle Goldberg, who wrote a column about this in the New York Times. I just want to read this quote to you. In presidential annals, the firing of FBI Director James Comey may be the most consequential move ever made by a modern president acting entirely on his own. Now, imagine Trump taking the same approach toward ordering the bombing of North Korea. It's sort of a frightening thought. Maybe it's a hyperbolic thought, but I'm just wondering if it's the kind of thought that occurs to you.
I'm not sure it goes to the level of bombing another country, but I certainly think that he gets out there on a limb in many cases without counsel. I guess at this point, my greatest hope is that he listens to some of the people who are knowledgeable around him. That's my only hope at this point. But I've seen enough instances where he has failed to do that. On immigration, on the so-called Muslim ban, he got right out there. It seems to be he's more focused on the campaign promise than how the machinery of government might work. So it's tough to respond to in a logical way or a rational way when you're not sure what is going to pop out of his mouth in terms of a new priority or a new direction.
How do you what's your response to the fact that North Korea and South Korea are going to engage in talks for the first time in a while? And this is happening in spite of President Trump's tweets, not because of them. Is this a good development, or does it look like North Korea might be trying to drive a wedge between South Korea and Washington? What's your view?
I think it's absolutely a good thing. I mean, what's the alternative here?
Yeah.
I've been to North Korea. I've been to the
DMZ,
right. We've been over to South Korea a number of times, and I think dialogue is our only hope in that instance, and maybe through economic ties and cultural ties, we can de-escalate the situation there between North and South Korea. And maybe it's just we just need to get out of the way if that's part of the equation to bring those countries together to avoid a disaster.
I'd love to ask you a sort of big picture political question or two about 2017 and looking forward to 2018. So you have a reputation as a moderate Democrat.
Thank you.
That's a good thing.
It is. I think so.
But you're a Democrat from one of the bluest states in the country. So with that in mind, how bad was 2017 in your view?
It was pretty bad. I mean, beginning with President Trump taking office, but also the missed opportunities ever since. I think this recent tax bill was a missed opportunity. I think the run that he made at just a blanket repeal of the Affordable Care Act without regard to the consequences, I think there were opportunities for us to make things a lot better for a lot of people in this country. So it's just been and I think, you know, when Trump came into office, he was talking about doing an infrastructure bill, and basically, if we had done the right thing on repatriating a lot of the foreign assets coming back into the United States, we could have funded that without really raising taxes, and we could have, you know, rebuilt a lot of infrastructure here, done some good work on climate change. Done great work on rapid transit, just a missed opportunity. So, a lot didn't get done because of Democratic opposition. But I guess I bemoan the fact that, geez, we had a chance to do some really good things here, and we didn't get that opportunity.
Well, let me ask you about the tax bill. I know it doesn't poll very popularly. I know obviously every Democrat voted against it. At the same time, it looks like pretty much most of the folks in the middle class are going to get some kind of tax cut, at least in the early part of the – in the next few years anyway. Isn't that a good thing?
Well, it depends on your age. For young people, this is going to add about $1.5 trillion in debt over the next 10 years. Is that what we should be doing? With an economy with unemployment rate of about 4.8% nationally, should we be piling on another $1.5 trillion in debt for kids who are going to be facing a lot of challenges that we're leaving for them? So, and who do we help here? With unemployment at 4.8%, is this really a jobs bill? I mean, that's almost, you know, a point where the unemployment rate reflects people going from job to job, you know, in between jobs. So it's not like a situation like President Obama had, where you had unemployment at 10% and you were trying to take a good whack at that. So I just don't know what the long-term benefits will be. Remember, the middle-class tax breaks basically phase out after 5 years. However, the corporate tax rate went from 35% to 20% and stays there. That's permanent.
Yeah.
So
that's the case with long-term benefits, and I get that. But I guess I'm asking you, just because it's the nature of politics, that the considerations are so often short-term, right? Mm. And so we're in a political year. Midterms are coming up. And I could just imagine Republicans being in a position of saying, well, Democrats like Stephen Lynch, you know, they were opposed to giving you all a tax cut. Last year. What do you say to that?
I'll accept that criticism. To go back to the fact that we're putting $1.5 trillion in debt on our grandchildren and kids, the upside did not justify doing that.
Well, what about 2018? Last month, following the election of Doug Jones in Alabama, who was just sworn in as senator a couple of days ago, you said that was a good sign for Democrats. What do you see ahead in 2018? Big opportunity here to retake the House for Democrats?
Well, I know we'll look, they've got, I think, a 46 or a 47 member advantage on us in the House. So we've got a lot of work to do. I think we can make a serious dent in that. I'm not sure we can get there yet. Election day is a long ways away. However, I do think that people are having second thoughts about having elected this president and having given the Republicans control of the White House, the House, and the Senate. So I think that there's the wind's at our backs, I'll say, for the Democrats if we take advantage of it.
And what does that mean, Congressman?
Well, remember, the places Hillary won by over 1 million votes in Massachusetts. We got all the electoral votes we could get. But we need to really, the people we need really need to speak to are people in the Midwest and the South, and try to push an agenda that includes them. A lot of those people voted for Trump because their towns, their cities had been wiped out in terms of jobs by foreign trade. So Trump comes in and says, hey, look, I'll tear up that NAFTA. So cities and towns in the Midwest who had lost millions and millions and millions of jobs saw him as their savior. That's a Democratic idea. And we didn't talk about that very much in the elections. We talked about we're going to put coal miners out of work. You know, that's not going to get you a whole lot of votes in West Virginia and Kentucky, to believe me. Mm. We lost every single state in Appalachia. And you know, that used to be an area that was really convinced that the Democrats were on the side of the angels and were acting in their best interest. So we've got some work to do, but we've got to figure out a way to make the Democratic Party relevant to the lives of working people in the Midwest and in the South and all over the country, not just the coasts.
Is there, and if there is, I'd love you to describe it, is there a sort of debate, a split in the Democratic Party right now? A moment ago, I referred to you as a moderate Democrat. In this state, we've got people who are sort of further out on the left, like Elizabeth Warren, for example. Is that the model of progressivism that is going to speak to these people? Or does Congressman Stephen Lynch say, we've got to be more moderate and hew a little bit more toward the middle to reach those folks?
The latter. We have to hew more to the center. I mean, that was the success of Bill Clinton.
So do the Democrats shoot themselves in the foot if they put their eggs in the Elizabeth Warren basket or the Bernie Sanders basket or, I don't know, maybe even the Joe Biden basket?
I don't think so. But those candidates have to, you know, refocus and make sure that some of the, you know, the lunchbox issues that are important to, blue-collar, lunch-bucket Democrats are being talked about. Half-joking, I said, you know, the last election, we talked more about free-range chicken than we did about working people. I was only half-kidding because we really did get out there on the edge on some of these issues. And, you know, if Trump is talking about, you know, tearing up NAFTA and we're talking about, you know, I don't know, you know, some a fringe issue, not that they're not important, but you got to have the meat and potatoes in terms of what's really important to people in order to get their attention. And I think the reason Trump's in office is because people forgot what the Democratic Party was all about and why the Democratic Party was important to them. And we let them forget.
You were at Marty Walsh's second inauguration, and we heard from former Vice President Joe Biden, who delivered a pretty full-throated sort of defense of the middle class and what has to happen to sort of restore the middle class idea here in America. Was that a message that resonated as one that the Democrats should really wrap themselves around?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe he got it right.
Yeah.
And I think that. You know, I know some people talk about his age, but, you know, he doesn't show me any sign of slowing down. And I think especially in the context of President Trump, I think, you know, Joe Biden's looking really good right now.
We also have a race for governor here in Massachusetts this year. I'd love to ask you about that and put this in context because much was made of this. You said recently that you would consider voting for Charlie Baker in 2018 on a Boston Herald podcast. What was the context of that? And were you saying you would consider voting for him over a viable Democrat?
Well, so somewhere in one of the campaigns, they had made an allegation that, Charlie Baker, because he had given money to the Republican National Committee, was actually supporting a pedophile in Alabama.
Roy Moore,
so,
right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So they made that. And so I said, that's a bit much. I said, that's like me, you know, supporting the Democrats and being blamed for the conduct of Al Franken. I said, you know, it just that's a stretch. And so they said, and I said, by the way, you know, Charlie Baker is actually a good and decent man, which I truly believe.
Yeah.
And so that's when they said, well, would you consider voting for him? And then I said, well, yeah, you know, because it's a long way from Election Day, and you know the issues haven't really been refined yet. But yeah, I think that Charlie Baker is worthy of consideration for a person's vote right now, at least from where I sit.
And what about the three Democrats, Seti Warren, Jay Gonzalez, and Bob Massey? Are you on the sidelines, or do you think—
pretty much on the sidelines there.
Right,
yeah.
All right. So the question might be, why not declare your support for one of them? They're one of your fellow Democrats.
I don't know enough about them yet. Okay. I think they're out there. They're, you know, I get emails. I think I'm on all their lists, so I get the campaign stuff on a regular basis. But I think it's fair to say that they haven't really defined themselves yet and what their administration would look like.
Well, that's obviously part of their challenge in the year ahead.
Right.
Congressman Stephen Lynch, he represents Massachusetts' 8th Congressional District, which includes parts of eastern Massachusetts and parts of Boston. Congressman, great pleasure to talk to you. Thanks
Anthony,
for coming
my
in.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.